been called America's top cop. Bill Bratton, former chief of the LAPD, has led the NYPD twice and the Boston Police Department, among others. And where Bill Bratton leads, change follows. He's a police reformer, but he's hardly anti-police. Over his 50-year career, Chief Bratton tackled dysfunction, mismanagement, even corruption in some of the biggest and most complicated police departments in the nation, while earning the respect of officers and community members alike. Now he's sharing the lessons he's learned about life, leadership, and crime in a new book, The Profession, a memoir of community, race, and the arc of policing in America. And I am delighted to welcome former police chief Bill Bratton to Frank Buckley Interviews. Chief, it's good to see you again, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be with you and your audience.
Thank you. Your book has a lot of history in it, but I want to start with what's happening right now in terms of policing in America, and specifically about the George Floyd murder and the officer convicted of murdering him, Derek Chauvin. This horrific intersection of a black man dying under the knee of a white police officer finally seemed to make many people understand what people of color, of black people in particular, have been saying for a long time, that police not only treat them differently, they treat them with a disregard and a disrespect for their very lives. What did the case say to you?
Well, clearly I describe in the book that it was an out-and-out murder. I never thought I would ever see what we all saw on that day, those 9 minutes. A prolonged murder by a uniformed police officer. Coming out of that crisis, we had an incredible period of turbulence, but we also had the largest outpouring of Americans ever seen, some 20-some-odd million people marching in cities around the country, demonstrating on behalf of the concept that black lives mattered and that for most of our history, they did not seem to matter. So that was a positive that what blacks have been striving for 400 years, now possibly there was going to be some light at the end of the tunnel. Unfortunately, it also highlighted deficiencies in American policing and what trust there had been between police and minority communities in many communities frayed and in some instances broke. It's going to take us a while to get that back again.
And, you know, for someone like you who worked so hard, especially during your time here in Los Angeles, we saw it with our own eyes, to repair those issues that have been part of our history in Los Angeles in terms of the way the police and the city, to some extent, treated black people in our city here in Los Angeles. You worked so hard to repair that, to bring people together, to create trust. When you saw what happened, it must have been painful for you.
It certainly was that, and particularly as I looked at events around the country in New York City, now my home city and state, and certainly Los Angeles, Boston, the demonstrations that occurred there, that when I came to LA in 2002, I came with the stated goal of turning that 50-year situation of open warfare between its police department and its black community, turning that around. And I believe during the 7 years, I was successful to a degree in building trust and addressing that systemic racism that had existed in the department, to the extent that the LA Times even opined in an editorial as I left that finally a corner had been turned on race relations. The book, the memoir, The Profession, I spent a lot of time on LA in the book because LA to me was one of the most significant accomplishments of my career. A lot of personal stories about the great people I dealt with in the police department, Charlie Beck, now Mike Moore, the new chief. But as importantly, and more importantly, some of the community members, Tolliver, Tolliver's Barbershop down in South LA, Sweet Alice, Lieutenant Fred Booker, Lieutenant Thomas, or now chief over in USC. LA for me was the example that it could be done. And it's an example I'd look to, being quite frank with you, in terms of how do we get out of the current mess that we find ourselves in? How do we see each other as we began to see each other in L.A. during that period of time? Trust has been basically disassembled for a period of time, but I think if we work at it, we can get it back together again.
what has been painful to see is in some cases, it seems like people, because it's become such a divisive issue, you either have to believe that Blue Lives Matter or Black Lives Matter. I suspect you don't see it that way.
No, it's we've caught up in the phraseology that if you say Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, it's seen as somehow another disrespectful to Black Lives Matter. It's none of those things. That it is this idea that we need to see each other better. Sweet Alice, one of the best accolades or comments I ever got was from the community activist Sweet Alice there in L.A., down in South L.A., who, when we were leaving L.A., my wife and I, she said to us, do you know why we like you so much? And I said, no, Sweet Alice, why is that? You see us. You really see us. And that, to me, was the story of my time in L.A. I saw them, they saw me, and through me, they saw the LAPD in a different way. And we can have that happen again, but it's going to be hard work. It's not going to be easy.
Some people believe that the way to get the police to be more responsive to a community is to defund the police department. I know you disagree with that that notion.
Disagree with that strongly. And from President Biden on down, most of the politicians who embrace that political hashtag that for a short period of time drove policy in a number of American cities, including L.A. L.A. was quick to embrace that hashtag and did, in fact, defund your police department. And where did it get you? The crime wave that you're experiencing right now. Already one of the most poorly funded and understaffed police departments in America throughout its history, you decided in L.A. politically, let's take more money away from the LAPD. Let's reduce the size of the department. And what did you get? Well, right now you get some of the worst crime in America once again.
To that point, let me follow up. Are you ready to name names in terms of who you blame for this idea of defunding the police here in L.A.?
I don't know who came up with the term in the first place that nobody wants to take credit for it anymore. But in a sense, political leadership, L.A., New York, many government leaders around the country embraced the concept. Won't name names for the sense that to defund the police meant different things to different people. Some of it was the idea maybe some responsibilities of the police could be taken away and given to somebody else. So let's defund them for that responsibility. Nice if you can do it, but you can't, because then you don't, it's going to cost you more to set up a separate bureaucracy. And that's going to be the problem with all this effort to let somebody else handle the emotionally disturbed, the drug addicted, the homeless, where you have the worst homeless problem in America, in Los Angeles, bar none. I've never seen anything like Skid Row acceptance in Latin America in my time down there. And it's gotten a lot worse. The Skid Row basically exploded throughout Los Angeles after I left. So that no need to finger point at any one particular politician, because there were a lot of people that got into that bed and they found they had a lot of bed bugs in that bed, so they wanted to get out of it as fast as they could. Good news is that defund is by and large a dead movement. And the problem you're going to have is a lot of good ideas coming about that police would like to divest themselves of those responsibilities. But even with the big surplus that you have in California with tax dollars and all the money you're going to spend trying to deal with the homeless, I can guarantee a few years down the line, police will still be the safety net to catch all of these failed initiatives. That police are not responsible primarily for dealing with the homeless problem. That is a government and societal problem. They are an integral part of it, but police are not the solution to the opioid drug crises, to homelessness, to the emotionally disturbed. Society has failed that for 50 years, and police got stuck with the responsibility. They'd like to get rid of it. They'd like to defund that responsibility. But that's going to be the challenge, and to do it effectively.
I want to follow up on that a little bit more in our second segment. But help me to understand and help our viewers to understand police officers as you know them. Because there is this mistrust and this idea of using a broad brush to paint all police officers. They see one bad action and they suggest that must be all officers, or that there is this systemic violence and systemic racism that exists within police departments. Do you believe that's so?
Is there systemic racism in some units? Are some officers racist? Guaranteed. I've been in the business 50 years. I've met some of them. Is the profession systemically racist? No, but it does have elements in certain departments, certain locations. And the idea is to try and root that out, to get rid of that where it exists. I would argue that the LAPD, for much of its history, was a systemically racist organization. Why? Because they were focused on the black population because of the political leadership in your city, going back into the 50s and the 60s, and some of the leadership of the department back in that era. But you've moved along since then. And so the LAPD that I came to know and to respect and to have the privilege of leading, it is now a majority-minority department. It's reflected throughout its ranks, Latinos, blacks, Asians, gays, transvestites, it's you name it, the LAPD, in many respects, has done a better job reflecting America than many other aspects, many other professions. No, but we did get painted with too broad a brush after the Chauvin incident. Chauvin does not represent American policing. Whatever was going on in that character's head, God only knows. But most American cops, and I've worked with enough of them over 50 years, want to do the right thing for all the right reasons. And they want to protect their communities. They want to protect their fellow citizens. And they do, by and large, a damn good job of it. Do they fall down from time to time? They certainly do. Good news is now we have much more transparency, much more ability to hold them accountable, much more upon which to build the trust that's going to be so essential. As to have trust, you have to have accountability. You have to have transparency. You need good leadership. You need good supervision. And in American policing at the moment, there's no shortage of that. Mm.
All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask Chief Bratton about his early days in policing and how things have changed.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
And we're back with the former LAPD chief, Bill Bratton. He's written a new book, The Profession, a memoir of community, race, and the arc of policing in America. Chief Bratton, you're from Boston, Dorchester. Actually, it's where you got your start as a police officer in the 70s. Badge number 1190, if I'm not mistaken. You write that police work back then wasn't really a profession. And as I was reading your book, you said that in your first real assignment was 6 weeks of training, and then they threw you out in the street. It's very different today, isn't it?
Very, very different today. That the title of the book, The Profession, was carefully chosen because of the issue that when I began, I don't believe that policing was a profession. It didn't have any of the hallmarks that you normally attribute to a profession. It didn't have a significant body of knowledge, if you will, research, et cetera. There was almost no schools of training other than police academies, and the police academies of those days were not the world's best. Certainly mine was not. I was on the streets of Boston after 8 weeks, as I speak to in the book, carrying a gun and the badge and the ability to take you into custody and maybe take your life even. Mm. So the book is about that arc of policing over the 50 years, the reforming of police to deal with the racism, the corruption, the incompetence, I think, that was the hallmarks of what was passing for profession at that time. And as we entered the 70s from the 60s, that it was a demand that police had to reform, that police had to become a profession. And over these last 50 years, we have become one. We've become a very successful one, but like every other profession, not without our flaws, not without our flawed personalities.
Right. We spoke earlier about the idea of the homeless situation here in Los Angeles. As you said, it has gone from Skid Row to virtually every neighborhood now in Los Angeles. We have folks living on sidewalks, under freeway overpasses. And one of the things that you were known for, especially in New York, was this idea of the broken windows theory of policing, this idea that if there is a broken window and the criminals see it and no one's doing anything about it, that that means that no one really cares about the community and it's sort of open season. I know that's sort of a paraphrasing all of it. But can you apply that to this idea of how the homeless situation is being dealt with here in Los Angeles. We all feel sympathy for people who are on the streets because of mental illness or drug abuse or economic circumstance. But the idea of letting folks live on the streets without helping them in some way, does that fall under the broken windows idea?
Broken windows speaks to it, but the resolution of the homeless problem is not broken windows. It helped in New York in the 90s to take care of the conditions in that city at that time, but it was a different set of rules that we all ever work with, et cetera. For a couple of years, 2002 to 2004, we began to get a handle on it, using largely the police in Los Angeles down in Skid Row. But then through a series of court decisions, Ninth Circuit, ACL lawsuits, effectively tools that we're attempting to use were taken away. And so dealing with the homeless problem in 2021 is much more difficult than it was in 2004 or 1994. It's been with us since the 1970s when we emptied out the mental institutions and basically all those poor souls ended up on the streets. California and Los Angeles problem is a problem that government created. Government ceased to fund facilities for those emotionally disturbed, those drug addicts, instead consciously pushed them down to Skid Row. When I first visited Skid Row in 2001, I was horrified. I had not seen anything like that. Even some of the slums and barrios of Latin America didn't rival what you had in Los Angeles. Set out to correct it, brought in George Kelling, had a good head start, got the homeless off the sidewalks, at least during the daytime, so businesses could thrive. But with the court decisions now, that situation has spread. What the remedy for it is, I don't know. It certainly is not the police. We don't have the enforcement powers we once had. And as the population has become increasingly emotionally disturbed individuals, we certainly don't have the capabilities to address it. You have limited beds for involuntary assignment of the mentally ill. You never have enough beds for your homeless population, which is why the courts always rule against you in Los Angeles and California. I wish I had the answers for that problem. I don't, and increasingly have fewer answers as to how to deal with some of the disorder and the violence in that community. It's going to be the great challenge of the 21st century, maybe more significantly challenging than anything else we've had to deal with in society. And it's not just Los Angeles now, it's every city in America. It is the equivalent, in a sense, somewhat of the coronavirus, not with the loss of actual lives by death, but just think of the lives that are destroyed by people who have to live on the streets and we're doing such a poor job of taking care of them.
I only have about 90 seconds here, but I want to ask you, speaking of the broken windows idea, you worked so closely with Rudy Giuliani when he was the mayor, you were the police commissioner. You really did do so much to change the situation and to bring the crime rate down in New York. You ended up posing on the cover of a national magazine, and Rudy Giuliani was not standing with you. He didn't take too well to that. But you know Rudy Giuliani. You worked with him so closely over the years. What do you make of Rudy Giuliani today? Have you watched him and wondered or talked to him about his, change and the person he is today?
I have only seen Rudy in passing over the last several years. Watch him certainly as the rest of America as he engages in the antics of the last several years. I haven't a clue as to what happened to him. He is a very different individual in terms of his antics, as I better describe them today, than his efforts in the 1990s to bring a semblance of normalcy to New York City. Smart, brilliant in many respects, tough, vindictive, he was all of those things, but he got things done. Deal well with the black community, which was a major problem. But what the hell happened to him now? Someday somebody might be able to figure it out, but I certainly have no answers for you.
All right, Chief. We're going to take one final break. When we come back, Chief Bratton has suggested never say never in terms of running another police department. We'll ask him about that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we're back with the former New York Police Department and LAP Police Department Chief of Police, Bill Bratton. Chief Bratton, when you were growing up and at some point you knew you wanted to be a police officer, did you ever think that someday you would rise to not only become the chief of the Boston Police Department, but also the New York Police Department and the LAPD?
When I first became a cop in Boston in 1970, that fulfilled the aspiration of my life up until that time. But as I began to move into the profession of policing in the 70s, I quickly began to aspire to go higher. And that included rising to the top in the Boston Police Department, which I was able to do within about 10 years, but also looked at Los Angeles and New York from a distance and thought, what if? And as luck would have it, what if became the reality?
Yeah.
And twice in New York, how often do you get the opportunity to do something twice? And 7 great years in Los Angeles, 7 of the best years of my professional life.
You mentioned during our conversation that the vast majority of officers want to do the right thing, that this idea of systemic racism, while it may exist in some units, is not pervasive throughout all of the departments. What do you say to that young officer who joins the department today, who does witness this, who does see it around him, some of these acts of racism, but doesn't really know how to fit in, but also do the right thing? How does that officer survive in that environment?
Well, fortunately, I think the environments have changed dramatically in most departments I've been associated with. I write extensively in the book about the experiences of two Los Angeles police officers, black officers, Fred Booker, lieutenant in charge of community relations when I was there, and J.T. Thomas, who was a lieutenant, my adjutant, who's now chief of security at USC. And you look at their experiences and you wonder, why the hell did they ever want to become a police officer? Because they had terrible experiences. And they are an example of people who respond to a calling, who want to make a difference and feel that putting on a police uniform and a badge, they can make a difference. And every introductory speech I would give to a recruit class in every department I ever ran, I talked to them about that calling, that every day when they put that badge on and go out in the street, they can have a life of significance. They can have a life that matters. My mantra that I developed in the LAPD in 2003 was, cops count, police matter. You as an individual cop, your actions can have ramifications well beyond your department and the profession. We saw that, unfortunately, the negativism of Derek Chauvin in terms of his awful impact, one officer. But then we look at the heroism of the Capitol Police officers on January 6th. Those hundreds of officers with poor leadership, awful strategies, under-equipped, who saved our democracy. Why? Because they took their oath seriously. They put their lives on the line. Several of them lost their lives. That's the true American police officer. That's the true calling of the profession.
Let me ask you, follow up on what happened on January 6th, the attack on our Capitol. We now have some elected leaders who are denying what happened, who suggest it was just like any other day. How damaging is that sort of statement to the rank and file?
That type of statement is very damaging to the people who make them. And let's face it, those congressional leaders who talk about it, the crowd was just tourists wandering through the lobby. Shame on them, particularly when you look at what actually happened. Thankfully, we have video, although some on the far, far right claim those were fabricated videos. No, we know what happened on that day. There was a conspiracy, literally, to basically take over our government, to ruin our democracy, to install somebody in office who had lost an election. And that's why I'm one of those who's advocating for a national commission like the 9/11 Commission to investigate the events of that day when we came this close to losing our democracy. And the only reason it didn't happen was because of the cops. Cops count, police matter.
Last question, and it's, again, following up on something you said about those black officers who were on your command staff, and you said, why the hell would they join? And I've asked that in talking to friends. Why in the heck would a person join the police department today when they're being attacked on the streets, attacked by elected leaders? Any action they take could be scrutinized in a way that could make them end up going to jail. It's not exactly an attractive recruiting poster today. What do you say to people who still want to serve in blue, who still want to serve the police department?
I strongly encourage them to serve. And fortunately, people who are joining in spite of all that adversity that you just described, those are the people you want, because they're coming in with strength, believing they can make a difference. They can have their actions count. They can have their actions matter. They can have a life of significance. In some respects, that's me. I consciously chose to go to cities that were in crises. I could have, when I became commissioner in Boston, spent the next 20 years just safely occupying that position. But I came to your city, L.A. I went to New York twice. Why? Because I felt I could make a difference, and I'd like to think that I did. That's what's coming into American policing today. That's what the vast majority of the men and women in policing today believe, that they can make a difference, and every day they do.
One more question. I saw you on a national program the other day. The reporter asked you if you'd ever run another police department again. You said never say never. Does that mean that you're still open to the idea of running a police department in a major city in America?
No, after you've done New York twice, L.A. once, that where else is there to go? I've been smart enough to avoid ever going into the federal government because you get nothing done there. That's why I stayed with city police department. So, no, I'm still around to advise, consult, comment. But as far as been there, done that. So you're not going to see me wearing a badge anytime soon.
And no chance you'll come back to Los Angeles to advise or consult with us?
That's what I do now with my company, Teneo Risk, that we're actually working with a major U.S. city, advising them on their crime issues at this time. But L.A., you're fortunate that you have your current chief, Chief Moore. You have a great police department despite its troubles and its issues. But you are fortunate. The biggest issue you have is that there are not enough of them.
Well, Chief, we do thank you for your time today, sir, and for your service to all of these cities across America as a police officer, and for helping to inform us about the police service and about the profession.
It's a great profession.
Thanks, Chief. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you're not a subscriber, I hope you'll do it today. It's free, of course, and it'll ensure that you won't miss a single episode of our podcast, which drops every week on Wednesday. You can also see our interviews on KTLA on the weekend and on YouTube. And I think we're on that new KTLA Plus app, so you can see our program on Roku and other devices. As always, thanks for sharing us on social media with your friends. Tag me when you do. I'm Frank Buckley TV on Twitter and on Instagram. Thanks for listening. And until next time, I'll see you on TV.